Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip.
And today we are interviewing Jonathan Epstein, the CMO of Sentient.ai, an unbelievable AI-focused company. And we're very happy to have him on the show to talk about AI today.
Great to be here.
And this is our first episode, actually, about artificial intelligence in depth.
Yeah, full on.
Yeah. And
we would love to have you give us feedback about today's show. So please leave us some feedback in the guest comment box on our site. You can also subscribe to listen to Future Commerce on iTunes and Google Play, or listen right from your Amazon Echo in TuneIn Radio with the phrase, Alexa, play Future Commerce podcast. And with that, super excited to have you, Jonathan. Maybe you could introduce yourself and give us a little bit of the story behind Sentient. You know, how did you get your beginning? How did you get involved? Give us a little history.
Sure, absolutely, be happy to. So Sentient is we're a mature startup, I guess we'd be called in Silicon Valley. The company's 9 years old, so we've been doing AI for quite a long time. AI is not a new thing. It's been, in the offing since the 60s or so. But as far as this most recent wave of AI, we started earlier than most. And the genesis of the company was our two founders, Antoine Blondeau and Babak Khojat, who are our CEO and our chief scientist, respectively, were sitting around. There may have been a shower epiphany involved, as the lore goes. But basically, the question they asked themselves was, what would be possible if we were able to apply artificial intelligence at truly massive scale? Now, both of them had worked in the space before. The two of them had worked together at a company called Dejima, which was sold to Sybase. Right. And Dejima did a project, the Kalo project, which ultimately morphed into what became Siri. So they were experienced with AI. And Antoine in particular was entranced by the notion of, could we find a way to apply vast amounts of compute to artificial intelligence? So set about with Babak and with, initial seed funding to build out a very powerful AI platform that not only combined a number of different types of AI, I'll go into that a little bit later, but also combined a middleware layer, what we call dark cycle, which allowed these models or these evolutions or these problems to be run across a huge number of computers. That network is now about 2 million CPUs and about 5,000 GPUs. So an amount of compute that, you might have if you're Google or your Facebook or your Amazon, but probably you don't have. And if you were to try to buy that amount of compute power on Amazon Cloud, for example, A, you couldn't, and B, if you could, it would be really expensive. So so that was the core theory. And the company's goal is to take this platform. We're not a platform company. We're a product company, and build products that achieve breakthrough performance or step function performance in industry at a time. The first business of the company was in the trading space. We run a hedge fund. It is the first fully AI-traded hedge fund. AI has been around in financial trading for a while, but usually the AI would give recommendations and then traders would execute the trades. So the difference with what we do is that really the only human input is to say, here are the signals you should look at, and they might be complex derivations of various technical indicators. But once that input is given to the AI, in the case of the hedge fund, it works on a field of AI called evolutionary algorithms. Once that input is given, then the machine figures out and essentially evolves and breeds virtual traders that then, once they're, trained up on initially on historical data and then on real-time data, but not with real money, are finally, the best of them are released into the fund, and they execute trades. They do the buy, the sell themselves. They figure out how to enter and exit positions and the nature of the orders and things like that. So that was the first business we were in.
That's so cool.
And as if that weren't enough, I mean, fintech is obviously massive right now. at least here, you know, in the Western Hemisphere. As if that weren't enough, there's more.
Oh yeah, certainly, and it's what brings us here today. So, in terms of other commercial offerings, about 3 years ago, we started looking at e-commerce as, and maybe commerce more generally as an area that we could make a lot of difference in. Mm-hmm. We look at the state of e-commerce, and company. Obviously, there's been a huge growth in e-commerce, and we're seeing big players emerge and all sorts of interesting models. But in terms of some of the fundamental characteristics of e-commerce, how the customer experience is designed and created, the types of conversion rates people enjoy, those things haven't necessarily changed so much over the last 10 years. And so we saw an opportunity there for AI to really transform the way people are able to run and execute e-commerce businesses in ways that would increase, you know, revenues and profitability and customer satisfaction. So we'll talk about that. Just to mention it, we also do quite a lot of research with leading institutions. I should note, people are saying, how do you do all these things? Sentient has raised more money than any other independent AI company. So we have raised about $143 million to date. So we're amply resourced to both build a platform, create, a number of products. And we do a lot of our platform research with research projects with people like MIT, MIT Media Lab, Oxford. And in those areas, we've done some very interesting work in healthcare. We've created a predictor for sepsis. We're now working [S2] Wow. [S1] On closed container agricultural optimization. What if you could grow any crop anywhere? Our role in that project is finding the ideal recipe, so to speak, the right combination of nutrients and light and water that will create the maximum crop yields for those projects. So we do, we're doing a lot of fun stuff. We do quite a lot of primary research. We have applied for 31 patents. We've been granted 11. We publish papers. It's really a remarkable institution. I came there. I was actually, my background is in media and in technology. I used to run a number of companies. If you're a gamer, you might be familiar with GameSpot. I was the founding CEO there. And
I love GameSpot.
It was in its day, it was a breakthrough. In 1996 when we launched it, no one had done that sort of publishing on the internet. So I've always tried to stay on the leading edge, and I ran GameSpy, and we sold GameSpy to IGN, so I ran that for a while. But I'd taken some time away from operations and had become an executive recruiter for a couple of years, and Sentient was one of my clients. And as I worked with them, I guess two things happened. One is I fell in love with the company and its vision, and really the premise of what AI can do, not just for finance, not just for commerce, but for so many different industries, and how that could change society for the better. Also the financial promise of, achieving such goals. And at the same time, they loved the job specification I wrote for them so much and how well I was able to tell their story and sell the company and recruit, a number of the top executives that are there today, that they brought me in a marketing role. So that's how I got there.
Nice.
Wow. That also officially the best intro of any show that we've ever done.
I would say so. Yeah, that was awesome. That's cool. Yeah, so you're playing AI to obviously several industries, commerce, a hedge fund, and several other industries. Commerce, is, what we really want to drill down on. And you guys have a couple of products that are focused on commerce, Ascend and Aware. So maybe you could give us a quick rundown on, how they work, what they can accomplish. Just to give us a quick take on this.
Sure, absolutely. So let me start with Sentient Aware. Sentient Aware is it's about a year old in terms of its commercial release, and its first customer deployments happened in November of last year. And Sentient Aware it's really a platform that uses AI to understand product catalogs at incredibly fine and nuanced levels, both visually and in terms of metadata around products. And it also understands user click streams. What are users doing on your site? And it brings those two inputs together to enable a pretty wide variety of applications that are designed to increase engagement and increase conversions based on, again, those two inputs. So some of the ways that people use Aware, one is this notion of adaptive merchandising, right? I think with most e-commerce sites, when you go and visit the homepage or the category page, everyone pretty much sees that same page. There might be a recommendation bar at the bottom, but the actual core order of the products displayed is based on maybe popularity, you know, some simplistic algorithm, maybe just the order that things are in the database, maybe promotional priorities. But by using Aware, it creates the potential that you can have each of those pages be tailored to the user and their particular interests. So right away from the start, you're able to create a more relevant and engaging experience for consumers. Mm. Another key benefit of it, and this is where we sort of originally, the first users used it, is in the area of visual search and product discovery. We're not a click to buy. We don't take pictures of shoes on people's feet and tell you what they are. The notion here is when you have retailers that have, you know, medium to large catalogs or really large catalogs, it can be very hard to find what you're looking for, particularly with visually driven products, right? If you search for a black dress or black cocktail dress or little black cocktail dress or whatever on Amazon, you'll get 10, 20, 30,000 responses. And of course, what that means to one individual might mean something very different to another individual. So, you know, everyone has been doing tagging for a while and trying to use that as a way to help people search, but it's very hard to describe things that are visual in words that are consistent. So standing Aware allows e-commerce operators that sell certain categories like fashion and shoes and watches and eyeglasses and home decor, the ability to create interfaces where the products are themselves the navigation into the product catalog. You can see this on shoeme.ca, which is shoes.com's Canadian site, where you come into a category and you're first displayed. The AI basically says, "Hey, here you're looking for a men's boot, let's say. Here are the 10 most distinct versions of that boot, and then you click on one, and it'll display 10 that are like that. Now, a lot of similarity or visual search systems could do that. We think we do that a little better, but it's with the second click that the magic starts happening, because all of a sudden we're starting to understand, you know, all right, it was the color and the heel, but not the buckle that you were interested in. And when they click a third time and a fourth time, we're really able to hone in on what is the user intent in the moment and deliver a product that will match that intent and lead to increased engagement and conversion. Hmm. Ascending Aware is also a recommendation tool. So, you know, at its core, we use this huge network of CPUs and GPUs we have to build very complex models around different types of products. We take a catalog and embed it in a high dimensionality space, they would say. So we sort of understand how similar any one product is to any other product across hundreds of dimensions, which might be visual or might be things like brand or what sport they're for, things that aren't necessarily visual. And then we let the user essentially path their way through that huge cloud of product and deliver them a personalized taxonomy of those products, the products that they'll want. Now, most of the applications have been on site so far, but we're now starting to extend Aware's capabilities so that if you want to do an email that is, you know, if you're trying to bring someone back to the site, you know, you can not just send them the most popular, you know, products or the most the ones that are, you know, on sale. You can do that too, of course, but the specific products that for that individual were right for them. So it's really moving us in the area of true personalization. So that's Sentient Aware. Sentient Aware knows what products you should show, you know, your customers and helps you increase engagement.
Gosh. So we, this is kind of an off the wall thought. We had Healy Cypher, who's the CEO over at Oak Labs, on the show a few weeks back. And he talked sort of about how he could, how Oak was applying sort of e-commerce techniques and tools to the physical store. I can't help but, like, as you were talking, my brain was just sort of ticking about, you know, man, would it be awesome if retail associates had power like this as shoppers were coming into the store?
Yeah, you're right on the money, and in a way, we think of this as what can we do to create the best attributes of a highly trained sales associate in a store and bring that power online? A good sales associate will know the customer. They'll know their habits. They'll know the context of their visit. They'll understand their tastes and preferences and, you know, how they might even shift seasonally. So that's what we're trying to do. We do have, shoes.com, which I mentioned, one of our customers, is using this in the store. They're using it primarily for consumer, consumer facing, so large format screens in the store. But it's a way to help them navigate the so-called endless aisle,
yeah,
and get to the products they want. And we also work with a company called ThoughtWorks. They're a pretty well-known retail systems integrator, and we've been exploring different types of clienteling apps. Where, yes, if you're Nordstrom's, your sales reps are well-trained, well-paid, and they know their products and they know their customers. But a lot of retail stores don't have that same kind of staff profile. Right. The staff turns over a lot. So, yes, you can use Aware to arm them or the customer service people on the phone with that same knowledge of, hey, if you couldn't find this, these would be good things to try and make the sale.
I love that.
I also had a follow-up question because what you said about, you know, a well-funded business probably has the ability to do some more interesting things in the space. And, you know, particularly I think you mentioned like shoes.com or at least their Canadian arm. They're doing some of these interesting things today with Aware, but I can imagine that you would have a phenomenal amount of training data or data available for a very large catalog on a marketplace like shoes.com, where you're getting shoes from all kinds of vendors with incredible depth of catalog. Is that something that you could potentially leverage and use with greater efficacy for a shoe vendor than, say, for someone else that you would have to have unique training data against? Does that put you like uniquely able to service footwear companies now? Or tell me how that kind of works and how you would apply that sort of to other verticals, at Sentient.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's a very astute question, and our model building pipeline continues to be enhanced. We've really made some great strides there recently. So when we started out, let's just take shoes as an example. Every vendor had their own, you know, sort of model developed for them, and there was an initial amount of training. We use, some of the people like Spare 5 or Mechanical Turk to essentially get things going. And at a certain point, we're able to then use the company's catalog and build out the model for them. But that's no longer the case. Now we do have a master shoe model for each category, and now we're moving to a master category being like heels versus boots versus athletics. Sandals, et cetera. But now we're building the mass, the one shoe model to rule them all. and we've applied those same techniques into fashion, into dress. I mean, dresses are a much harder problem than shoes for a number of reasons. The back matters as well as the front. Mm. The pictures are often taken on people, where shoe pictures are pretty consistently, generally a certain angle or a set of angles, and they're not on people's feet. So that, that's taken some more doing. Sunglasses, we have a sunglass model where we'll be deploying pretty soon. I can't name the name, but a pretty significant chain there. And if you think about sunglasses, there's some basic design differences, but a lot of them look very similar, you know, so we had to find really nuanced approaches. It's a model building, and then the ability to deliver that, you know, in a cost-effective manner. Those are things that we've been particularly good at and continue to get better at.
And I'm going to sort of help you segue back to talking about Ascend. But yes. one of the big problems with smaller retailers or retailers that are sort of trying to take the next step to applying data to their decision making, so that they're kind of getting away from the gut feeling approach and becoming more data driven. One of those things is they tend to turn to tools like multivariate testing or A/B tests to sort of help them make better reasoned decisions. But what they often find is that they just don't have enough data, whether it be the types of tests that they're trying to run or the pages they're running it on or the traffic that they actually would need to come to some sort of statistical significance to even make a decision with classical models. And I know that you sort of have a solution to this with Ascend. I'd love for you to pitch it. But the thought that I'm going to ask you to try to answer it is under the guise of, you know, is it the type of technology that can be that is really can be consumed by SMB, not that we're an SMB focused podcast, but is it something that's sort of broadly available to all of digital commerce, or is it something that is better utilized with like what you've done with Aware, where you're building models that are specific to a particular vertical that make you exceptional at that particular vertical, or is it something you grow into? So I'll go ahead and answer before I answer for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, let me start by just, you know, talking about what Seni and Ascend is and setting the stage for that. So, you know, I was at a ThoughtWorks conference the other week, a conference called Paradigm Shift, and they had the founder of Fast Company magazine was one of the keynote speakers. And she spoke a lot about experimentation and testing and how it's at the heart of becoming a breakthrough business in the next 10 years. And that the key thing to maximize is insights divided by the sum of dollars plus time, right? The more things you can learn more quickly, and this wasn't just limited to the website, but it was a great way of thinking about it, right? Because we do have access to data now. And so if there are ways that allow us to use the signals we get more efficiently, if there are ways that allow us to use them more cost effectively, then this is a real powerful advantage for businesses that take these up. So Ascend is the first conversion rate optimization solution. Some people say conversion and revenue optimization solution that's based on evolutionary algorithms. So it's a different form of AI than what drives Aware, which is built on top of deep learning and online learning stacks. And the great benefit that Ascend provides is that on the same traffic that you might have been able to do one A/B test on, or a few A/B tests, or maybe a small multivariate test, you know, testing eight different combinations of or designs of your website, we have clients that are testing thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of different potential design combinations to achieve results that much more quickly. Now, when I say hundreds of thousands of combinations, that doesn't mean you're changing 100,000, you know, design elements or copy or layout or colors on your web pages. It means it might be 20 or 30 or 40, but believe me, it stacks up pretty fast in terms of all the different ways you might combine those different changes. And at the heart of this is this notion of evolutionary algorithms, which we use for the hedge fund also, where it's a branch of AI that's built around, at its core, the principles of natural selection. What's fitness, right? Fitness is what makes something better than another. So with a hedge fund, it's does this trading desk, this virtual trading desk, make money better than the other ones? And in the case of a website, it might be conversion percentages, it might be revenues, it might be page views if you're a media site. There's a notion of combination, breeding things together, and that if you have two successful web designs that are better than others and you combine them in some way, that some of the quote-unquote children of those two designs, some of them will be even better than the parents. Some may be worse, some may be the same, but some will be better. And then mutation is this other function in evolution. Mutation makes sure that we're exploring all corners of the map, as they'd say in statistical terms, and finding not, you know, just a good design that you know, lifts revenues or conversions, but finding the best design. And so by using these principles, and the Ascend platform automates the testing process, you'll put in 10, 20 different, you know, things that you think will move the needle on performance. And it goes through a process of evolving different designs. And by using evolution, you can test and solve for the best of, you know, say, in one of our case studies, 29,000 potential designs while you're only testing about 150 of them. So that's a huge speed up over A/B testing. You could, you know, we wouldn't live long enough. Well, we probably live long enough, but your business wouldn't be around long enough to test, you know, 29,000 A/B tests. It's just, you know, and you'd go mad separately. It's a game changer for testing, and it's being adopted. You know, so a lot of the top consultancies and companies are starting to take it up, test anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think to your point, like a lot of, you know, sort of smaller mid-market players or even mid-market players are only able to test, you know, they only do a few major tests throughout the year, maybe more than a few, but right. It's nothing compared to what you're talking about. Right. Like it's almost, you know, it's exponential figure, you know, and so it's just a very cool piece of technology that it seems like, and you've got some very cool studies to back up, it's effective. So that's, I definitely really enjoyed your full-on demo. And honestly, for our listeners, if you ever get a chance to see a full-on demo of Ascend, I'd highly recommend it.
I can provide the URL if you want.
There you go.
But yeah. you'll find it on the Sentient.ai website. But, to answer the question you asked, yes, this works for small businesses or small to medium businesses. It works for really large businesses. We have some customers that have 50,000 users a month. You know, we have some that have 10 million users a month, right? So, you know, yes, the ones that have 10 million users can test even more things than the ones that have 50. But no matter what your size is, this method will work better to test more things. And by testing more things, it's like throwing darts at a dartboard, right? Each test is a dart. And, you know, you might hit the dartboard and you might miss the dartboard, and you might, you know, you might get a bullseye, you might get a 1 point, you know, each dart is a little different. But if you can throw many more darts, you know, the chances are that more of them will hit. And the score, it's actually not just additive, it's multiplicative. It's the combination, there's a synergistic value in the combination of various design changes that add up. And so we see very exciting lifts in, you know, in conversions and in revenues, 15%, 80%, you know, and there's, you know, and then the fact that it automates the whole process is, you know, some people love that as well. It also tests across multiple pages, which is not something most current solutions can do. So I spend a lot of time on this. I was just out at a conference in London. And everyone's lining up to test it.
So I kind of already know the answer to this, and so I'm going to ask it anyway. And then I'll ask a follow-up that I don't know the answer to. So do you plan to expand Ascend's feature set and capabilities in the upcoming year? And is there anything maybe that you haven't talked about or released yet that you want to unveil on the show?
You know, to the latter question, I'm not, you know, I have to think about that. I think we tend to, you know, be pretty open about our roadmap. So it's not, I'm not sure I have any surprises for you there will be an exciting brand new UI come the new year or before. Yep. So, nice. You know, definitely working on that. But I would say there's three areas for Ascend and the changes we're making to it. One is just in terms of core, you know, core features, the number of platforms we integrate into, the number of analytic systems we integrate into. This hasn't been announced, so we are just adding Adobe Analytics integration. That should be live early next week.
Nice.
Hey. So there you go. Currently we integrate with GA, and you know, that's very helpful. You don't need to, by the way, to be integrated with a commerce platform. It'll work with any commerce platform, but you know, it can be very helpful as well. So things like that, better looking graphs, you know, core feature stuff is one area, but the more exciting futures are in two other areas. One is, and we've talked about this before, right now Ascend will take your ideas, right? We don't make up the ideas. The ideas come from the marketers and the consultants and the agencies like that. That's really important. And we need more of them than other solutions do. We take those ideas and we build the best possible, the best web design to achieve your goal, we'll say revenues, improving revenues for your audience or any segment of that audience that you define. The next version, which will come out in next year, uses a different type of AI, something called neuroevolution, where you use evolutionary computational techniques to evolve a neural network, right? Which is what, you know, is behind deep learning. And in that example, you, as the site owner, you would say, all right, here are my ideas for design changes, but here are the things I want you to consider about every user. What device are they on? Where are they in the country? What time of day is it where they are? What ad group did they click on? And what do I know about them as a, if they're registered? And we will evolve a neural network that will understand the importance and the relationship of all those different signals in defining the absolutely best design for that person at that time, right? So then you get into a, so both Aware and Ascend, our focus when we have that version of Ascend on, how do we really personalize the customer experience for a commerce environment? In the case of Ascend, it's what products should we show? And, sorry, Aware is what products we should show. And with Ascend, it's, you know, how best should we show them to achieve the goal of increasing business. Now, Ascend does, you know, Ascend isn't limited to, you know, e-commerce. It works great for lead gen, for B2B sales, other types of, you know, web businesses, really any business that, that relies on these digital touch points for the lifeblood of their results. The other area we'll be expanding in Ascend is right now it focuses on website optimization, but I think you can see us take it into email optimization and also advertising creative optimization. So, you know, stay tuned. We have a very exciting roadmap.
Awesome. That's thanks for talking about the future. That's exciting.
You know, from what we know, from what I know about Sentient, you know, you guys have a very clear vision for intelligent commerce. And, you know, I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, but are you doing anything else in the world of AI in commerce or digital commerce or maybe even retail that's beyond what you've already laid out that sort of helps achieve that vision? And how do you actually see the job of people working in digital commerce right now sort of changing and evolving to adapt to making use of the data and decision points that you're providing?
Yeah, both good questions. Let me answer the second one first. I actually just wrote an article in MarTech Advisor, which took on the question of, you know, is AI going to enhance or end my marketing career? So we can, you know, can probably insert e-commerce there as well. There's certainly, you know, there's a lot of fear that's spread by various analysts, by people like Elon Musk. You know, AI is coming to take our jobs away. And that, and you know, we don't see, no, I, you know, it will happen in some areas, like for sure, because it, you know, things that, there are certain, you know, repetitive processes that can be done better, faster, cheaper, and learn, you know, and they also learn faster by the machine. But in the area of commerce and marketing, you know, digital marketing, we see AI as really allowing people in the field to focus on creativity, on ideas, on hypotheses, on the high value stuff, and focus less on, you know, in the case of Ascend, how to run a test, right? It allows the best ideas, whether that's what products to carry or what design changes, what copy to try. It democratizes the process so that, you know, it's not who's paid highest that gets to decide what to test. The system can test it all and do all those things. So we see these tools, both of them, as augmenting the roles of the people that are running e-commerce businesses or running the marketing for them, and allowing them to achieve better results for their business, right? And do stuff that's more satisfying and engaging in their careers. Hmm. Now, as far as, you know, the intelligent commerce vision that we have, it's, you know, it's a pretty big one. It's you know, ultimately, it's how do we deliver more personalization and engagement and relevancy to e-commerce and digital marketing in ways that drive not just better business for, you know, the companies, but also make better experiences for the consumers. You know, I sometimes think about creating a more efficient marketplace. Efficiency sometimes sounds so, you know, like a cold word, but it's not meant to be, right? It's like, how do I, if I can get what I'm looking for faster as a shopper, you know, when I want to do it quickly, then that's a good thing, right?
Yep.
If you waste less of my time, that's a good thing. If I want to waste time, then you should let me, right? You know, similarly, if companies can stock the right product because they have better input. I mean, so one of the interesting benefits of Aware is our customers that run it, Skechers is another one, by the way, they expose a much higher percentage of their catalog than they ever did before. Because you know, e-commerce sites without Aware generally, you know, you have pages and pages and pages of products. The ones at the top get seen. There's sort of standardized hierarchies. And in the case of shoes.com, only 20% of their Canadian stock was shown in a given month, shown on the website.
Wow.
You know, in a portion of that was bought. And with us, it was 93%. Because when you break down the one size fits all hierarchy and taxonomies that, you know, current e-commerce platforms have and allow people to find their own way, they will find their own way.
Yeah.
And they'll see your products. Yeah. And then they'll buy the ones they like, which may not be all of them, but that informs a much better and smarter merchandising plan for the next, you know, for the next season, right? All right. People saw it all. They had a chance to vote. Let's move in this direction, right? Those types of things. You'll see us move, you know, and in terms of additional products, you know, Aware and Ascend are both viewed as platforms, and both of them will extend in terms of functionality. I mentioned Aware functionality is now being projected into emails, but you'll see it used for advertising, for retargeting. There's, you know, we love chatbots, but we think that if you're trying to sell someone something versus service them, that just talking to them isn't that great. So how do we use, you know, the APIs of Aware to imbue chatbots with, you know, again, an experience that is much more like the knowledgeable store associate bringing you, you know, the next set of glasses that they think you'll like.
Right.
Ooh,
And then one other thing is analytics, right? So underlying this all, you'll see us move into how do we take everything we've learned from both these products and other things we can learn and present them in a way that allow e-commerce operators and marketers to make even better and more informed decisions, the important ones.
Oh man. So, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking, okay, you guys are actually going to be competing against some, you know, some pretty big names with this, like, Adobe, the Adobe Experience Manager and Commerce Cloud, right? Probably Salesforce, new Einstein Commerce Cloud technology, and also maybe even IBM, like Cognitive Commerce, actually. Like, actually, could you maybe give sort of like a
word, Brian.
Potentially.
You mean Cognitive Commerce? Is that what you said?
Yeah. It's sort of a brand word, right? Like that's kind of a marketing. It is a bit of an
IBM brand word for sure. Yeah, no, but I mean, like, you know, if you go look on Sentient site, you know, they kind of run intelligent commerce, you know, similar to, at least I sort of saw some similarities between what you guys are going after and what IBM is going after. Maybe you could kind of highlight some of the differences between what your vision is and where you play versus, you know, what IBM's doing with Watson, which is very all encompassing for sure. I mean, it's they've put a lot of different tools out underneath the Watson name. So,
yeah. I mean, I think this, well, the guy that runs the Intelligent Commerce Unit formerly worked at Watson was, did a lot of product development there. So I think a cynical view of Watson might be that it's been more of a brand initiative and a way to position IBM, and IBM's a great company. I would never suggest otherwise, but to give them an aura of mystique in a leadership position. Whereas, I think that, underneath that Watson label, they took a number of products, some which were AI, some of which weren't AI, and have put it into that framework. I think, sure, our visions overlap in sort of the end goal. How do we make commerce work better, more fluidly for both the retailer and the customer? But I think the ways in which we're going about it are different. Watson is very focused on natural language processing. They certainly do other stuff as well. But, if you look at their North Face is a great application.
Yeah.
Sort of trying to do the same thing. How do I find that, winter jacket? But it's all about, asking and answering questions. Whereas our approach has been visually focused. How do you do a visual conversation? We do that, why did we do that? Well, there's a couple of reasons for that. One is, our guys were involved in the early Siri and they kind of felt natural language has been done. So, they chose to focus on something else. But more to the point, if you look at, I have children that are in college, but the people that the kids that are growing up, their language is visual, right? It's not so much typing words in the way that it used to be.
Yeah.
And on mobile, it's really hard to, I guess people are pretty good at it, but it's not that fun, right? And so trying to deploy conversational interfaces in a mobile setting by typing, now you can always, chat as well, seems limiting. But more to the point, it's like for the types of products that Aware focuses on, these are visual products. Right? Typing doesn't work. Voicing it may not work either because different words mean different things to different people. But in terms of the competitive set, I think you're right. I mean, there's a lot of recommendation engines. There's a lot of visual search guys. There are, chatbot companies. But, I think we do, while we, I can't say we've actually run into any of those bigger guys in any specific customer engagement, I'm sure all our big clients do talk to them. And that is the playing ground where Sanyan sees itself is how do we build a business that's worth, separate from our other business units, billions of dollars based on our ability to make things better for this most critical industry we serve.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things that stood out to me, as you first came on the show, and I think this is the question that I have for a lot of these AI companies is how much of it is essentially is hands off, right? Like when I think AI, I think of a being, not a being, but, of something that can do things that I would do on its own. And obviously there's different levels of this. But I think what everyone wants is someone that can go out there and actually make the trades, right? And make those decisions and then actually make the purchasing decision, right? And so.
Or the merchandising decision or the site design decision. No, you're right. So we focus very much on building autonomous tools, right? Yeah. We want our hedge funds to trade on their own. Sanyan and Ascend, you put in the ideas, but once you do that, you hit start. It figures out in what order to test them and how to do it, and it determines the winner from, in that case, user input. And Aware, knows what products to show, so and does that in real time for each user individually. So
yeah,
it's really important because otherwise it won't be efficient, right? You by using machine learning, AI to handle those kinds of processes. Again, you can free up humans for higher value tasks. It's not that those things aren't of value, but for the creative input that informs the models that these systems are based on.
Well, yeah, no, this makes me want to go like, oh, sorry, Philip, I cut you off there.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, so this makes me kind of want to step back a little bit even and ask you some questions about AI in general. I mean, obviously, it's a really hot topic right now. I mean, at this point, Google has all but come out and said, the AI is the future. Other companies have pretty much done the same thing. I mean, heck, Zuckerberg's going to have a personal AI assistant now that Robert Downey Jr. wants the voice, right?
We all want that, right? Like
we all want that. Yeah, for sure. But maybe you could, I mean, for our listeners, maybe you could, and usually we don't explain AI on this show, and I don't want to get too far down this road, but maybe you could just give us a little more about the state of AI right now, you know, what it can do, what it can't do, where you think it's headed.
So, I mean, it's kind of a tough question in some ways, because it, you know, the evangelist and optimist in me wants to, you know, basically believe that AI can ultimately do pretty much anything that is definable. No. I'll come back to your question, right? Yeah. And say, I think, look, what are the limits? Let's talk about what are the limitations, right?
Sure.
The limitations on what AI can do. One is the data and how organized the data is, right? There's a lot of data. Like we all have a lot of data, but it's not always organized in a way that makes it easily processed. Compute power, obviously gets cheaper all the time. No one else is doing what we're doing. It's pretty hard to aggregate, large amounts of compute power, unless you're a really big company or you're doing it distributed like we are. There's a lot of AI companies out there, but a lot of their models aren't particularly deep or robust as they could be if they're run on a larger scale. So I think, that's one of the holdback. AI is, there's still some things that, we're searching for. We're working on this as well, which is how can we make the AI learn like people do, unsupervised, without a frame of reference other than maybe, babies don't have a training set, they pick it up as they go. And, sure, there's a mom there saying this or that or providing input, but it's not the same, right? So that's what we would like to see AI get to. It's not really there today in a big way. Now, we talk about AI, there are many types of AI, there are many approaches, there's Bayesian, there's evolution, there's neuroevolution, there's deep learning, there's all sorts of variants therein of these things. So it's kind of an important thing to remember. But look, here's the deal. AI is going to be, and in many ways already is, in everything we do, and in its best manifestations, you won't know it's there, right? Uber's got AI. Nest has AI, right? Siri, of course, has AI. I mean, all these things that are in their own categories, breakthroughs, are using AI techniques. But it's in support of a larger goal. It's not about, we're not trying to create a brain. We're trying to create products that deliver value to people and to businesses. That's our focus. Other people are trying to create, artificial brains. And, we'll see where they go. That'll be interesting. But, go on.
But so, I don't know. Maybe I watch too many Hollywood movies, but isn't the frame of reference kind of the important part here? Because when you sort of take off the frame of reference and you have no context for these bots, like we saw Microsoft's Tay basically became a genocidal racist, and Stephen Hawking thinks that we're creating Skynet. I mean, I kind of keep hearing doom and gloom around this stuff. And on one side, you have people who say it's a panacea. You have the other side who say that, if we use the internet as training data, it's like they're getting the worst of humanity. It's probably a little bit of both, but I'm kind of conflicted myself on, it has broad applications everywhere, but if we take context out of it, what are we creating?
I didn't mean, so unsupervised learning doesn't mean you take context out of it. It means that it can learn things on its own. But to make the right decisions, right? I mean, so we think, when we think about our systems, we think about essentially a loop. It's called the OODA loop. It's a military I guess, framework or model, but it's OODA stands for observe, orient, decide, act. And it is a loop. So you do that again and again and again. And if you think about the different AI technologies, deep learning is particularly good at observing and oriented perceptual issues. Mm. What is that? What is that picture? What is that word? And how does it relate to other words on the page or you know, where is this picture, this building, where is it on that map? And in evolutional techniques and neuroevolution and artificial, you know, there's something called artificial life, a life that isn't what we were just talking about. You know, these are really good at making decisions, right? Ultimate optimization tools. But the combination of these things is what allows you to do autonomy. And what the military research showed, this is all about, you know, which combat fighters who all had pretty much the same training and the same trainers.
Right.
Some did much better than others. What made them successful wasn't always making the right decision, but the speed at which they iterated across that loop and learned through the process. And AI is really good at that. If you have the compute to run it at scale and at speed, and you have the different technologies to handle those parts of it. So that's been our organizing framework. Look, I think, you know, I is it a panacea? No. Is it doom and gloom? You know, certainly not. Does it have the potential to be, you know, misused? Absolutely. Mm. Starting with fire is usually the one they call out in the AI circles. It's like, hey, fire, it's pretty good, but you know, you can burn things down with it too. you know, so, yeah. So I think where people get worried is like, is this technology so powerful with the machines can think and take over things? We don't have the right safety nets, but I do feel like the community as a whole, the big guys, you know, and the small guys, you know, people take this, with great seriousness, right? There is a great commitment to how do we work together to ensure that these technologies are harnessed for the benefit of mankind. And, you know, personally, while there is a chance, right, I think some jobs will, you know, not be needed to be done by humans in the future. But I don't believe that means that people are out of work. Historically, we find new ways for people to occupy their time. And if this really plays out, and AI can deliver on, you know, the, you know, more efficient energy and more efficient transportation and more efficient shopping and better, you know, relationships even with other people, you know, we could see a very transformed society within, you know, shorter time than you think, 30, 40, 50 years, you know, maybe not in my lifetime, maybe so though, because health is changing, but definitely my kid's lifetime. If I don't know if you follow Peter Diamandis at all, but, you know, he was also a speaker at this event I went to. A paradigm shift, and he has a great newsletter. And, you know, there is abundance all around us, right? The news distorts the reality, and AI is part of what's going to bring it all together exponentially in ways that benefit all of us.
So I do want to ask one follow-up there, just because you sort of touched on it. We have such a it took us a long time to get to a place where we had to make decisions in the realm of biology, of what ethical boundaries were in the realm of biology. Do you see a future where we have to create ethical boundaries for AI research?
Yeah, I think that work is happening now. I mean, there was the consortium that was just formed by the, you know, Microsoft and Google and others, Facebook and others, is not the first, but certainly the biggest such consortium. And, you know, that will involve, we belong to several such groups. So the dialogues are happening, right? We have them internal to ourselves, right? What websites should we allow to optimize using our technology? Should there be limits or should there not be limits? And there's great debates about that sort of stuff, but that's the trivial stuff, right? It's more like, how do we, you know, So for example, we don't do government work, right? Some AI companies do, but it's not so much to be moralistic,
right?
Well, sort of right. It is. Like, we're not interested. Like there's so much to be done. We choose not to focus our energies in making better you know, defense systems, cybersecurity maybe, but not, you know, missile defense. And, and you know, but
you know, Skynet.
Well, that is where people get, you know, get concerned with Skynet, sure, or war games with Matthew Broderick, of course. But you just have to ask the AI the right question and you can paralyze it, and then the whole thing comes crashing down.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, you have shed so much light on this industry. It's very exciting what you're doing and where AI is headed. We're coming up on the end of our time here, but we typically like to conclude our interviews, you know, with some practical advice for our listeners. So what are some practical ways that our listeners could apply AI to their business in the short term? And then what are some things that they should do to prepare for the next few years ahead?
Yeah, so I think, you know, in the short term, look, there's some great products out there, ours among them, right? Sentient Aware, Sentient Ascend, if you're a big retailer of visual products, Aware would be interesting thing to, you know, to check out. And for anyone that's doing website stuff, look at Ascend. I think for customer service ticketing apps, there's a company called Inventa. That's doing some great stuff and really able to reduce costs there in your support centers. You should be playing with chatbots. I mean, I think chatbots are a little bit, you know, potentially, you know, if poorly done, they can be cheesy.
Yeah.
But they're getting better all the time. Mm-hmm. And so now's a good time to play with them. Pandora Bots is a site to check out if you're interested in that stuff. And there's even AIs for site selection for you guys that have physical retailers. Site Zeus is a company we ran across recently that's, you know, trying to use the data sets to understand, given what you're selling, where should you put your next store? So, you know, I think it's, you know, be open-minded. You know, that's really my advice. Do not be put off by this, you know, the images that some people would like to project about what AI is. Because look, AI, it's just a better set of algorithms, right? They're just faster, and they do, you know, they're self-learning, right? So they continue to improve, but it's just using computers to try to simulate human processes. So the article I wrote about, is marketing going to, you know, eliminate your, sorry, is AI going to eliminate your marketing career? The answer was generally no. Unless you put your head in the sand and don't choose to explore. So the key thing right now is, you know, keep an open mind, find out what's out there, play with it, and you'll see what you like and you see what you don't like. And then, you know, 5 years out, it's almost too hard to predict. But I think by that time, pretty much anyone that is leading in the technologies that they would use to run their business will be leveraging AI in one form or another. So I think that'll just come to them. But if you don't, you know, take a look at it now, you may not be there 5 years from now to have that exploration. So, you know, it's time to pay.
Great advice. Make sure you pay attention and educate yourself and be ready. I love it. Well, thanks again so much for coming on the show, Jonathan. For our listeners, please, again, would love to get feedback from you. So whatever means you want to provide feedback, discuss comment box, Twitter, LinkedIn, just talk with us, interact with us. And we, you know, we'd love to hear more about your thoughts on the show and specifically on today's show. Also, if you can, hop on iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. You could always use that. Thanks again, Jonathan. With that, keep looking towards the future.
Indeed. Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you so much.
To the future.
Thanks. Thank you.